Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. This is Paranexus Radio. I'm Michael Jones. Doug and Grant are taking some time off. I'm running the alien abduction portion of the show now. I do have a special guest tonight, Dinah Arnett, and I'll bring her on in just a second. I wanted to mention a few things that are happening with Paranexus. We do now have a board of directors over our brand new nonprofit organization, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how this is going to spin off. I mean, there's a lot of positive aspects to being nonprofit. We're going to be able to do a lot more research. We're going to have more people involved, and I really, really, really want people out there to get involved with this. We're constantly looking for other researchers to join the organization, to become a part of it, to feel committed, and to learn and grow. You know, that's the main thing. And my guest tonight is Dinah Arnett. She has had multiple abductions happen to her since childhood, and I thought it would be interesting for everybody to hear a female standpoint on abductions. Dinah, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great. How are you doing tonight?
Doing wonderful, wonderful. We're here in this, well, sunny today, hot today in the south in Florida.
Oh, great, great. Yeah, I was explaining to everybody a little bit about your background. If you could tell us some more about yourself, that'd be wonderful.
Well, you know, it's always, everyone starts the same way. We start thinking we're strange and we're weird and we don't want to talk about it. And then as we get a little bit older and we find a little support from other people having similar experiences, then blah, blah, we start realizing that there is something going on. And I remember I was probably 12 or 13 that I started hearing voices in my bedroom at night. But, of course, you know, I had to come up with some reason I heard those voices. So I figured it was the Venetian blinds. They were like radio receptors. And then if that couldn't have been it, it had to be the fillings in my teeth. And I know that sounds funny and laughable because the voices were that close to my face. And
right.
That was the only way I could explain it. So I would go, I remember going to my father the next day and said, there's people. I hear people in my room. And he says, well, do you think they're outside the room? And of course, you're looking for anything. And I said, well, maybe. And so he would call the local authorities and they would do a drive-by to see if there was anybody outside the house. And then after a while, when there was no one out there, you just don't say anything anymore. You know, you just kind of keep your mouth shut. You don't want to cause trouble because you're a little kid.
Right, right. So what did you find? I mean, did it escalate later for you, or did you? I mean, how did this lead back into finding out you're an abductee?
Well, as a child, you became more withdrawn. You knew something wasn't right. You just felt very strange about yourself, and so you bury it, is what most of us do. You don't want to talk about it. You don't want to think about it. if something like, well, I know another example is I remember a little bit later looking out in the sky, and my sister and I coming home from school actually saw two UFOs come from two different directions. They merged in the sky, they stopped momentarily, and they moved away. And, of course, I ran home and told my mother, and you know how adults will always say, you know, you're a child, you don't know what you're talking about, don't say any more. So, once again, you just don't talk about it. You just pretend like it never happened, and you ignore it, because that's all you can do. You ignore it till you get older, and then all of a sudden you realize something is going on here. And that was probably when I was 13, 14. And I was starting to go into puberty, as all young girls start. And you start having all these emotional situations happening in your world. And you just don't do anything. You don't outwardly talk to people. You don't tell your parents. You just kind of live with it and deal with it till you get a little bit, till you're able to get on your own and you get outside the home. And that's when I think more activities start happening, because I was gung-ho on leaving home. I was going to get a job. I was going to finish up college. I was making a track to have my own money and my own space. And I think that kind of what happens to a lot of us who have been abducted is we have to get out on our own. We don't want to be in a family environment anymore. We want to be out working, staying busy. I don't know how each other people do it, but I became a workaholic. If I stayed working all the time, I would be so tired at night, I wouldn't wake up. I wouldn't remember anything.
Right. So, well, as far as you were literally wanting the solitude, though, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, see, that's exactly what I went through. You know, a lot of things that you're recounting are a lot of things that I personally went through myself, and I've talked to other abductees, and they recount the same kind of situation. You know, you always feel like you're the outsider. You want to succeed at everything you're doing, but you're still, you know, you're wanting that solitude. You're wanting to get out on your own and then get away from everybody kind of feeling, you know.
Did you find that you liked to go to bed? You wanted to hurry up and go to bed and go to sleep, and you stayed asleep when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. Well, and then on top of it, I wanted my bed in the corner, too, so that my back was against the wall.
Oh, yeah. That wall, the wall is very important to me. Is if I go out to a restaurant, I need to be sitting with I need my back to the wall. I mean, even today, if we go into a restaurant, my husband knows that I am going to change the location till I have my back against the wall so I can watch the room. And I think that with even if you went to a concert as a young person, you wanted to be in the back of the concert hall so you could watch the room. And, you know, you don't think that's odd till you reflect back on it later, is that you were always, like you have mentioned in some of your blogs, hyper-vigilant. You're always watching the room. You're always, you know, I felt like I was from The Exorcist when my head could turn completely around. I had to need to know what was going on in my environment 24/7, where everyone was, what everyone was doing. If I was in a restaurant, I needed to know where the people were. I know they were just eating their food, but I had to know where they were, if they were getting up to go to the bathroom, if they were getting up to pay their bill, things that no one else would even care about. It was like I had to see where everyone was so I could keep track of everything while I was trying to enjoy a meal, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, but you're so busy and caught up trying to take care of what's going on in your environment, you kind of lose track of everything else. I've been there and done that many a time. I still catch myself, as a matter of fact, doing the back in the corner thing, you know, that hypervigilance and not wanting anything behind me. I think that comes from actually the times that I've had the grays show up and you feel the hand on the shoulder deal, or, you know, it's just, it's really overwhelming. It's so scary. It's beyond words, you know.
And, you know, you're right about that fear is, you know how you're watching a scary movie as a young person. You watch it and you've got your whole attention. You know that something's going to jump out at you. I could not watch that type of movie because it was seemed like there was always going to be something jumping out at me in real life. From the corner of my eyes, you could always, I had just a wide peripheral vision, and I always had to move back, so whatever was going to come at me, I could keep track of it. And I think that's because in the middle of the night, things were coming, things were happening. In the early days, there was no air conditioning. Air conditioners are the last 10, 15 years. But we're going back 30, 40 years. You had your windows open all the time. So, you know, you could hear the outside noises. You could see the, and we didn't have a lot of lighting in the early days. You know, you didn't have 24/7 street lights. You didn't have all the ambient light that we have in our houses and the LEDs. So there was a lot, when a light came on somewhere or something moved, you were well aware of it. You heard it. I tell people I could hear grass grow. And I always wondered why I would come up with that comment, because I did hear things in the night. And you just kind of just close your eyes and think, oh, this is not going to happen. Go to sleep. Go to keep your head covered up. Nothing, you know, you keep, and don't hang your hand off the side of the bed. You know, you have all these little tricks.
Oh, yeah.
But as I grew older and became more sexually matured, that's when it all started happening. You know, you'd wake up and you'd have pain around your abdomen area, and you knew something went on. Or I'd have terrible periods, and there'd been no reason for it to have such pain. And you just, you know, my mother would say, oh, you're just a wuss, not understanding where this was really leading. And you would, and of course, I found out many years later what was happening to me. As I grew older, I had a business in Tampa, and one day this couple walked in and they introduced themselves and they said, we run one of the local MUFON agencies, the regional agencies, and we want you to look at this material. And I've since realized that other people that have been abductees or in the UFO phenomenon, they recognize those who've had situations. You just know. And so when they brought that material to me, they knew that I had been going through it, even though I wasn't willing to admit something had been going on. And so, you know, when I opened up and saw my first gray, you know, I hyperventilated. I couldn't breathe because I knew that that's what was coming in the middle of the night. And now I had an actual face, and someone else had that actual face and had given it to me, so it wasn't my imagination. I could no longer say this was showtime. This was a real deal. And that's when I started doing all the research and all the study and started going to all the UFO conferences. And I was probably in my early 30s at that point. Mm-hmm. And I didn't dare talk to anyone. You know, if you talk to your family, they just thought you were crazy as a loon. You were, you know, you had moved out. And my father was a minister. If you can imagine being a woman and your father being a minister and living in the South, you just had three things going totally against you when it came to unusual. Then when you said this would happen, something unusual, they would not accept it. And God forbid that you should tell them that you thought it was an alien or, you know, someone from another planet.
Right.
And I'm sure everyone in the audience has had those typical reactions.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's pretty much my situation. You know, I grew up, I'm in the South. I grew up in that kind of atmosphere also. And for, you know, for men, I think the thing that's probably one of the hardest things to do as far as your peer group's concerned is trying to allow yourself to talk to anybody, because you're just constantly going to be spurned. You're not going to have friends. You know, they're going to totally disassociate themselves, you know, from you, and you're a whack job as far as they're concerned. I've actually, I don't know how many times you've had to move yourself. I've moved a couple of times over this. You know, I've had people, you know, in the neighborhood find out and get upset that, you know, there's a crazy guy living next door, you know. Then on top of it, I've had friends that have experienced this with me that would have nothing to do with me anymore. And, you know, it's just, it's really a hard life. You know, I'm not, for me, I only knew one woman in my entire time of dealing with this that was an abductee also, and we used to talk, and that was the main reason I was sitting there thinking that this it'd be great to bring somebody on here that has a female point of view of what happens during these abductions. I mean, could you explain some of the stuff that actually happens? I mean, for men, we get picked up, you get samples taken, you get prodded, poked, the whole nine. That's what we go through. It's still psychologically hard on you because you're not in control, you're scared out of your mind. They're sure as a world not going to tell you what they're up to, but. What's it like for a female having to deal with this?
Well, what they're going to do, and here's what they did to me, and I think every woman might be differently. In my case, they wanted the eggs. They wanted the eggs, and I can tell you there's only one way to get them, and it's not a pleasant experience. And I believe even today, I do not get sick. I do not want to, unless I have to do it once a year, go into a doctor's office. I do not want to be laid. I do not like to lay on those the medical bed that gives. I just and see the doctor who always has the white coat on because it reminds me of a gray who has one color because they just have one color, and it is a very. It's not so much frightening. It's just a tremendous psychological. Feeling to be laying in a regular medical profession on the bed there in today's world because it makes you go right back to what happened. Well, they, like I said, they wanted my eggs, and I always had difficult periods. No one else in my family did. I never had children. I absolutely had no desire for children. I felt that once a month or whenever this process of them harvesting my eggs happened, now, I can put voice to what happened years later, but at the time, all I remember was the pain and the intense bleeding and the clotting that was not normal for, there was nothing in our family history for me to have that kind of situation. But if someone is harvesting your eggs and they're using whatever equipment they do, you're going to have clotting and unusual bleeding because they're in that area making it happen. Well, what I have since observed, and they did this prime time for me was probably about 21 to my mid-30s, and it didn't happen every month. Sometimes I got a break, or maybe I just told myself it wasn't happening. But it was a regular procedure, and then later on, as I got into my late 30s, I started having people come. Now, see, in my late 30s, since it started in my 20s, you can understand where I'm going with this conversation. People would come to me because I started traveling around trying to find answers, and they would say, oh, aren't you so-and-so from another state, or don't you live in New York, or don't you have a sister who lives, a niece or a daughter who lives here and there? I started having, even just a few weeks ago it happened, I've had so many people come up to me and say, I know you, or you have someone that looks exactly like you. And
are these other females approaching you?
Yes. Okay. Now, men have approached me as well. A lot of times it would be females who would stare me down. They would stop me dead, practically put their hands on my shoulders and say, wow, I know you. And you live in whatever, in Kansas or whatever. It was never Florida. It was always a wide variety of states. And they were convinced. If you'd heard these people talk, you knew that they definitely knew me. Well, they didn't know me personally, but they knew an offspring of mine that had grown up and was in their 20s. Because by that time, it would have been about the same period of time. So that's when I started getting confirmation that parts of me were being spread around. And I guess obviously they had to be implanted in other women for it to happen. And I always wonder how those women would be, and maybe they were, thinking they were going to get one type of child that should look like someone in their family, and all of a sudden it didn't look like anybody in their family, and they wondered where that child came from.
So do you think that's part of like a hybrid program, or just a genetic manipulation program to study the effects?
I think some. I don't know. I know what you're saying, but what I think in my case is because I have such a strong health. I am not sick. I'm very strong physically and emotionally and mentally, and an intelligent type person. I believe they wanted people like me that, and I think they do control me. I think they do monitor me. I think they control me, that possibly they were just making more of me in certain places so they could, I was a good tool to kind of maybe spy for them, because I'm always out looking. Remember I told you how I'm always observing the rooms and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I was like their little, their eyes and ears, and so maybe they created more eyes and ears like me. That was just my theory. You know, you don't know why they would want more of me.
Right.
Or maybe they, like you said, maybe they put a little genetic mixture with each time they implanted one of my eggs into someone else. Because obviously they had to also, you know, use a sperm from someone. So maybe it was another type of test they were doing out there in their field.
Wow. You were telling me about... I believe you were recounting one of your abduction experiences last time we talked on the phone together. Jim, would you mind sharing that?
In Tampa, when I started once I realized what was happening, then the whole window came open, or the wall came open, the whole recognition of what was happening. And so one night I woke. And I found myself outside my house. I was in my backyard, and when I turned around, I vividly remember the sliding glass door was open. I was outside, and as I remember the next moment, I have a chain link fence. I was on the other side of my chain link fence, but as I moved across the chain link fence, I remember cutting my arm on the chain link. I remember grabbing a twig, there was a bush there, and I remember my, I think I had, a fear took a hold of me, because I was not asleep, I was awake. I guess I was trying to cling to that chain link fence because I didn't want to be taken away. And the next thing I know, obviously you wake up and you're in bed. And so, as soon as it was daylight, I got up and I immediately went outside, and the cut was on my arm. I found the bush that I had grabbed. It had been broken. On the other side of the chain link fence, which was kind of interesting, there was absolutely nothing growing at this point in time. It was nothing but sand. And there I could see where I guess I must have released my urine, because I could see the wet stain and I could smell it, and smell it was urine.
Wow.
And so I, for once in my life, I took the picture of the stain, but I didn't put the you know, the sand in a test tube. You know, usually you don't even have enough sense to do that. And I took a part of the bush that I had broken. But that was, at that point, that was way too much realism for me.
Right.
And so the next time it happened, I said, if you guys are going to hurt me like this, you know, you know what to call them. I don't want to remember. And so please cut back on some of the memories. Well, unfortunately, they did not cut back, because probably about a year later, I woke up at 1:30. This is my time, would be 11:30 to 1:30. I'd go to sleep about 9, and then come 11:30, 1:30, then I'd start waking up. I found myself on a craft. And I was in an area where it looked like giant gel caps that you take like vitamins, but they were really what I saw, some type of embryo or some type of living something in those. And there was like a Nordic in there, but this Nordic particularly had long hair, I remember, or more something covering his face. Well, there was an explosion on this craft, and I remember... the explosion was in where the children were, and then I found myself being flung back through time and space, waking up at 1:30. I always looked at, I got the habit where I looked at the clock all the time so I could keep track of things, and I found that my arms were covered with a smelly something, you know, I don't know what it was, but it was so smelly, and I could not sleep the rest of the night. And so the next, I knew I was on a craft. I knew there had been an explosion. I knew there was a loss of life, because that's what they had told me as they propelled me back into the bed. There was five people on that craft from the Tampa Bay area. I found one other, and this took me about 6 months asking, and I finally found one person, and she said, yes, I was on that craft, but don't you ever mention it to me again. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to think about it. Just leave me alone. And this is the kind of response that, as always, Mike, you have heard, people don't want to remember these things. They want to blank it out. They want to forget about it. They want to push it to the background as far as they can.
Right. You know, there's that kind of reminds me of the situation that I had experienced. There was five or six other people, and we'd seen look like a condensation trail just appear out of nowhere above us, and I mean real low. We're talking, you know, a couple hundred feet above us. Now, you know, we were thinking, oh, that's really a low, you know, low-lying cloud just to show up all of a sudden. Well, off in the distance, I'm seeing a red light back in the forest just hovering. And, you know, the next thing we know, we're all laying down on the concrete, just, you know, like cords of wood. And I get up, and I'm, you know, I remember them showing up and knocking us out. I don't remember after that point, and then I remember waking up, and then there were several people in the group that did not, you know, they didn't remember a thing. And then there were a couple that did, and the couple that did, you know, they absolutely didn't want to talk about it. They had nothing to do with me anymore, you know. You know, you get associated with it, and then the sad thing of it is it's not even your fault. It was one of those situations, you know, you just can't believe the level of people's denial. You know, even though it's happened to them, they flat refuse to want to remember. You know, it's so horrifying, I guess, or so hard for them to deal with, they just don't want to talk about it.
So. You know, we had talked about hypnosis for a moment. Well, obviously, when these things start happening, you start some people run from it, and people like us run toward it because we want to understand it. We read more books on psychology. We study a lot of different things. But hypnosis was the first place I ran, and I found that when I had my hypnosis training, what would happen is, you know, we practice on each other. Well, when it would be my time for them to put me under, I went so deep and disappeared so far that they had trouble getting me back into the waking world. And it dawned on me that obviously that when we're abducted, it has to be some type of, you know, hypnosis is the best way I can describe it. And I think I mentioned to you that if the right person looks at me and taps me on my right wrist, that's all it takes for me to go under. I finally have recognized so I'm very careful around hypnosis now, because I do just disappear. I just fade. You're not going to be able to talk to me or get anything out of me because I have just gone somewhere.
Wow.
Really, really far away.
So is that something that you think the Grays may have trained you to do so they can control you easier without having to use any technology? Or?
I think so. I think that was some early childhood training when they first start with you. I think that's I'm sure of it.
Because, you know, I find it interesting you're talking about the right wrist. I remember when I'm being led around, it's usually by my right arm or right wrist, you know, and I never have really thought about it, what they're actually doing. But I do know I'm usually, you know, I'm not in control of the situation whatsoever. It's almost like, you know, I'm just a third-party observer that is really scared, and I'm watching my body walk around wherever they want to go.
Right, and it's easier that way. You're safer. You feel safer by letting them take care of you and your mind be removed.
Yeah, that's exactly what I experienced, and it's really frightening. You know, when you come back, it's just it's there's no words to describe it. You know, the other abductees out there that are listening to this, I know you know exactly what we're talking about. This is one of those things that's really hard to, explain to other people of what's going on, and it sounds, you know, pretty manic, actually, but for those of, you know, that are experiencing this, this is a very common part of it.
Now, you know, I all of a sudden had a nice little life going in Tampa. I had a nice little business. And I woke up, we had the Hurricane Charlie here in 2004. And I woke up and I said, I'm moving. And now for me to move, I'm a nester. You know, I nest, I make my friends and my family and everything. And bingo, we moved up into Ocala, into the forest. Not to the city, we moved into the woods. And we're 1 hour away from a city. And I thought, now this is really odd. What? And I thought, well, if I move, they won't come with me. You know, I'll be up there by myself. Well, after I have thought about it for the last couple of years, sometimes it takes a couple of years to figure it out, is there's minimum power lines up here. And like I said, the sky is bright at night. There just seems to be less. My attention is not diverted by the mundane things of being in a city, the noise and the people and all that. And so it dawned on me, now what am I doing? What am I doing to further their cause now? And I began to realize that they're monitoring me still. I think I may have, they're looking to see how my species will live, I think, especially healthy people like me. And I might have been taken out of the city so that I don't get bogged down with some of the city diseases, you know, the swine flu and all the stuff that goes on when you're in a crowded area. So sometimes it might be a good thing when, like you said, you moved around. Maybe you didn't realize that moving around was to better position you for what their needs were.
Exactly. Hey, we have a question from the chat room that says, do many abductees report vivid memories, or are they just more just disjointed feelings and vague recollections? Well, for myself, personally, I have a full-blown recollection of the instances during my childhood and some during my teenage years. The times that you'll hear me talk about blacking out or losing parts of my memory, I think what happens is just like war veterans, you have post-traumatic stress syndrome, I pretty much kick in, and what happens is you can't handle any more information. Your brain shuts off until it can handle it again. You know, the terror level is so high that you emotionally shut down. And that's just, it's part of a survival instinct, I think, in a lot of people that are dealing with this. Post-traumatic stress syndrome is a very common thing that all abductees deal with. You know, it's just like Donnie was talking about, you have that hypervigilance constantly with you, keeping your back against the wall, sleeping with your bed against the wall, so you always have your back against something. You know, you're always wanting to know where everything is. And always taking note of everything around you, it's just part of it. I mean, what do you say about that, Dinah?
There are some times when it is so vivid that it's not disjointed. It is very clear. And I think when you have those clear moments, it takes a year or so for you to pick it apart, to understand it, to absorb it so that you can take on the next memory. Because it's like you said, it's like watching a scary movie, except you're not watching it. You are part of that scary movie. You're part of that being pulled underneath the bed. I don't know about you, but when we thought about monsters under the bed or Psycho in the shower curtain, those things become very real. We take those scary moments and we apply it to what has happened to us, and sometimes there's more fear for us than there are for other people. I don't know about you, but I can't do scary movies anymore because I live a scary movie sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. I have issues watching a lot of these movies. I think for instance, the movie Poltergeist with the clown under the bed grabbing me kind of thing, you know, that the idea of something grabbing you you know, that just triggered all kinds of memories in me. You know, the hands grabbing you while you're in bed or whatever, that frightened the crap out of me, you know. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, oh, that's just the way they filmed it. Well, to us, you know, that's the way it happens. You're in bed and all of a sudden something comes in and escorts you out. That's the hands grabbing you, you know. That's really hard to deal with, and that's the way your memory functions. It's like a trigger, and it's just something else.
Well, my husband knows that we have a king-size bed, and he sleeps on – we have to have a wide space in between us, not because we don't love each other, because he has been given his instructions, do not touch me in the middle of the night. And he knows I am dead serious. I said, if you're going to marry me, you're going to have to realize what has happened to me. I have not had your normal, you know, all-American life here. And, you know, a man doesn't want to hear that. He wants to know that he's got a perfect apple pie little woman here. But he knows not to sneak up on me, not to touch me, because he knows I will go berserk.
Oh, yeah.
So he is well aware of that. On my website, there was something that happened to me, which really was one of the major turning points for me when I was going through all of this. And when they came into my house one night, something must have happened in the whole process, and they got trapped. I guess I have to explain it this way because you don't know how else to explain it. Something happened, and they actually got trapped in my third bedroom. I lived in a split-level house so that the three bedrooms were on one end, and the living room and the kitchen were on the other end. But I woke up at 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning knowing that something seriously had happened. And I got up, and I don't know where I got this braveness. Like, you know what? Somehow it's so unbelievable that it's not about being brave anymore. It's about you've got to figure out what's going on. The fear has just become so strong that you're not afraid anymore. You're just past fear. So I walked down to my third bedroom, and as I reached, the door was shut. And now that's another thing that you will do is you always leave all the doors open. You sleep with the bedroom doors open. You leave the bathroom doors open. Every door in your house is open. Even your closet doors are cracked.
Oh, yeah.
So the bedroom door was closed, and I lived alone at that time, and that was very odd. And when I reached for that doorknob, my hand jerked back and hit my elbow, practically hit the closet door behind me, and there was, I used a voice, you know, it was in my head. They're always talking in your head, saying, don't open this door. If you open this door and come into this room, you will not leave. And I thought, oh, this is silly. And I went to open it again. And for several attempts, I could not get that door open. And I distinctly remember, just like you had stopped the film and had it run backwards, I literally walked like a robot backwards all the way to the bedroom, walking completely backwards, laying down in that bed, getting up the next morning when it was daylight, walking back down to that room to say, oh, this was just a crazy dream. Honestly, same thing happened. I could not open that door. It took 3 to 4 days for me to open that door. And finally, when I did open it, I kicked it open to see nothing in there. But I don't know if there was a vortex or what was going on in that room, but definitely something very strange haywire went on with that whole event. And so you store that memory. And so I thought, well, a couple of years went by. You know, you don't know why you wait a couple of years. It's always that way. A couple of years goes by, and you decide you're going to write it down. Well, I was writing the story and took a picture of the hallway. And when I did, this very odd creature showed up. And if people go to my website, they'll see that creature that showed up, which was not a bug or anything. And I didn't realize it was on the film until I got it back from the photo store. That's when we actually had to take our film down and have it developed. And that was only in 94. But that proved to me that something very bad went on in that room.
Yeah. What's your website address, by the way, for everybody that was listening in?
It's www.dmariepress.com. And on the navigational bar, if you'll go to Entity Photos.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
But you see that? You see that in the doorway?
Yes. Yes, I do. Yeah, so you didn't even see this at the time you took the photo?
Oh, no, no. I took two pictures back to back. And it was interesting that when I was just telling the story, I wasn't even interested in this thing. As I was telling the story, someone said, oh, look at that picture. Now, aside to this whole thing, I don't know if people in your audience remember Art Bell, who used to do his radio show out of Pahrump, Nevada. I sent this photo to him, and his show in Tampa would come on at 1:30 in the morning. Well, the phone rang at 2:30 in the morning, and my husband got up, and Art Bell said, I know you're sleeping, but tell her to get up. She's going to be on the radio and at 3 o'clock. And so I got up, and I told him this story, just as I told it to you. I have no idea, but I've had time to reflect on it, realizing something really went wrong that night in the world of ETs or whatever was going on. Now, where I lived, I was near MacDill, a major Air Force base. I was within a 30-minute drive of that Air Force base. I also was near Tampa Bay, which are vehicles, you know, a lot of phenomena. And I was near an airport. So everything that kind of makes up when you hear things that happen in the UFO world, you tend to sometimes hear these three elements: Air Force bases, you know, water elements, and a lot of airplanes.
Right. Yeah, I have a question for you. All this time that you've been dealing with the abduction phenomena, have you noticed that you have psychic events or psychokinetic events happen where things will be moving on their own, things disappear? You actually have precognition going on, you know, and it's not that it's constant. It just seems like it waxes and wanes with the abductions.
You exactly. All of a sudden, you become what you call a psychic. I wake up in the morning, I know what the headlines are. The precognitive, that you know what's going on. I can wake up and say to my husband, "We're going to get some bad news today," and the phone will ring, and someone that we knew has passed away. I sometimes will find things, apports, you know, that have fallen from other dimensions. And like you said, I came home one time and my furniture from my living room was piled up in my kitchen. When you're home, sometimes you can make things happen because of your psychic abilities or the energy you put off. But it was interesting that I wasn't home and the furniture had moved. So, and a lot of that stuff happened at the same time when my first husband was killed in a really tragic accident, and I believe that his death triggered those abilities of mine. And I think those abilities happen because when you're working with the ETs, or I'm not saying working with them, but when they are, you become part of that dimension. You are working with that different dimension because obviously they're coming from someplace, and I don't think it's from planet Earth.
No, that's another thing I've talked about in the past, that I would sit there and think that a lot of it's technology based, but then I start looking at the dynamics of how they come in, how they step in, how they pick you up, and how they take off, and you know, it's really odd. They are very good at what they do as far as just showing up out of nowhere, and I find that really strange. You know that. You know, surely, even if you had an invisibility cloak, somebody would have noticed something odd, you know, like heat signatures or something. You know, the police helicopters have infrared cameras going all the time, you know, the night cameras on their helicopter for finding people, you know, the FLIR technology. And surely they would have noticed these UFOs coming down and messing with people. But instead of that, what happens is you get abducted, and all of a sudden you're somewhere else. And it really makes no sense why you can be in one place and then another place in an instant. outside of your either changing dimensions or, you know, somehow they've shifted your location with dimensional technology. I'm not too sure how they're, you know, how they'd go about that, but it's fascinating on one hand, and the other hand, it's kind of terrifying that they have that kind of power.
You know, I mentioned this to you the other night. Now, this, what I'm about to tell you now, is something that is a relatively new event. It's happened three times in the last 6 weeks. I had gone to bed early, probably about 10 o'clock, and all of a sudden the room lit up. And I turned to my husband, "Did you see that?" And, of course, he hates it, the myth, when something like that happens, because he thinks, "Oh, my God, Twilight Zone's coming." And he said, "Yes, I saw." Now, it was not heat lightning. It did not light up from outside the house. It lit up inside the house. And so I got up and walked around, and obviously I didn't find anything. Well, about 2 weeks later, I was driving in the car, and all of a sudden, this just like someone jumped on my hood and took a flash bulb right in my face. It happened again just a few days ago. And once I said to him, "Did you see that?" He said, "No, nor do I think I was having some brain flash or anything like this, because this definitely was not inside my head. It definitely came from the outside looking in like a flash bulb." Right. Now, I don't know if you've experienced that, but this is something brand new.
Well, no, that's something. I mean, if you remember, we were talking about that I had that situation happen to me about, I guess it was three weeks ago. I had the same situation. You know, I was in my bedroom, and I thought it was heat lightning. And I see a flash in the room, and I'm like, going, "Well, that's really odd." Well, it's just, you know, I just kind of blew it off to being heat lightning. You know, and when you're living in the South, you have heat lightning. You know, there may be might not be a storm outside, but you still have it. And so I just kind of blew it off, and I rolled over, and I'm facing towards my rear sliding glass doors that, you know, go out to my deck, and I've got vertical Venetian blinds, and I'm seeing a ball of light just hanging in space, and it's about the size, I'd say, of a baseball or a little bigger, and it looks like just an energy ball. And it's there for, like, I'd say about a 2 second count, and then it's gone. It just vanishes. And so I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, what was that all about? You know, and the nice thing of it was I wasn't scared as much as I was, you know, okay, what's next? I think that was my question in my head that came up. You know, I was just like, okay, that was odd. What's next? What am I in for? You know, because usually when that kind of stuff starts happening, that's usually the indicator, you know, that something's coming. You know, they're coming to pick you up, or it's already happened.
But was it early? Mine was about 10 o'clock, 10:30, somewhere in there.
It was right around that range at night. It was just right after sunset. It was right after sunset here locally. And that's you know, I've talked to Doug and other people at Paranexus about it, and, you know, there's no explanation for it. It's just an instance of something happening, you know, and I didn't catch it on film. You know, I've recreated a simulation of it, but it's like I said, it's just one of those instances of weird stuff that happen, and there's nothing you can really make of it, and there's no rhyme or reason for it happening. Now, and what I found interesting is when you brought that up, it kind of sent chills down my back, because, you know, I hadn't mentioned it to you before. And I haven't had a chance to talk to the other abductees that I talked to in the forum about it, whether or not they've been noticing it. But that's something I need to look into, evidently.
Well, obviously, and like I said, this happened twice in the daytime. And this other 10 o'clock, that's not the normal time they come visiting. My time is 11:30 or 1:30. And they were pretty steady that 1:30. I got to the point where you're just like, okay, it's 1:30. But I will tell you another interesting 1:30 situation that happened. I mentioned that my first husband had been killed, and I think that just it was a difficult situation. But it also made me, once again, emotionally hypersensitive as well. But one night at 1:30 in the morning, the phone rang. And when I answered the phone, it was my husband calling. I have to say, we use the word calling from the other side. But I think he was in that same dimension that sometimes where the ETs walk. I don't, you know, if we call the fifth dimension, sixth dimension, whatever you want to call it. But that space between what we feel is a time where there's no time. He came on the line. I heard his voice, but it took him a long time, and I could hear all these rumble of voices, like if you were at Grand Central Station or a very busy airport hub and you hear a hum of voices. And I heard him moving toward the phone, and the whole time I'm holding that phone and saying, hello, hello. And he came up to me, and he said to me, I have the key, but I don't know how to get in. And that happened back in probably the early 90s when I heard that phone call. So I realized two things are happening, is there's something of this psychic type events happening alongside with ET type events. And, you know, I believe they happen in the same dimension, but the distinct events happening.
Right. Let me mention real quick, if anybody would like to call in and ask our guest a question or ask me a question, the number is 347-945-7799, or you can ask your question in the chat room. We'll be more than happy to relay it to Dinah and to me. So I have another question for you. Could you describe actually what a gray looks like?
In my particular situation, I want to say they have these big eyes. To me, I call them the little people, and they all are what I call one color. It's kind of like a no color. You know, you can see silver, you can see gray, but they're just a little small, and I'm a small person, and they're actually smaller than I am. They're probably, in what I have seen, they're about 4 foot. And I don't notice their fingers so much as I notice their face, because when they lean over you and they stare at you with those big eyes, I went one time to have cosmetic surgery, have eyeliner tattooed on, mm-hmm. and when the lady put on these big goggles to lean over me to so that she could tattoo me, I had a panic attack that sent me. I jumped off her little bed, and I was in the corner of her little place, all, you know, wadded up like a. And she says, "What is wrong with you?" I said, "I don't know, but when you leaned down with those big eyes and that white coat on, that one color thing, and looked over at me, it just sent chills." So, you know, I just remember the bending over more than anything else.
Right. See, I have problems with dentists. Myself.
Well, there you go.
You know, it's the same situation. People leaning over me. I've even been in supermarkets and get, you know, flashbacks in the middle of the supermarket. It gets bad, so bad sometimes. Would you say they're more like an ashen white color, in your opinion?
Well, it's like no color. You know, you want to say gray, you want to say ashen, but you definitely not blue or red or pink.
Oh, no. It's more transparent skin color.
That's it.
Yeah.
And it's all, you don't see wrinkles. You don't see elbow joints or finger joints or anything. It's just, you just see that smoothness and those, and I guess the eyes, like you said, because we spend so much time watching them bend over us.
Mm-hmm.
Or I call it bending over, because we're always laying prone, and that's the problem I have at doctor's office and dentist's office, is being in that prone position.
Right.
Like I said, people leaning over you.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that my main memory is that leaning over and scanning, that, you know, when they make eye contact with you, you can pretty much count it as over as far as you having control. That's pretty much when you're getting escorted at that point.
When I always have a low hum in my ears, and I just said I've had tinnitus, which I don't know why I have it, but sometimes I wonder if that low, I'll get real quiet and I'll hear it, but I just wonder from all those times of being abducted, if something didn't happen to my middle ear, because there shouldn't have been any reason for it in my normal life to create that hum. Do you ever notice a hum?
I get a low frequency, it's like a subharmonic. It's a pulsing, and the times that I was totally lucid during the period of them showing up, that pulsing noise would get so loud it actually make my entire body vibrate. But yeah, I've heard that in the background before, and it's disconcerting. I mean, it just brings back memories for me, and it also reminds me that they're probably somewhere around at the time too. So.
Well, that's a good thought. I hadn't thought about that. But and from another woman's point of view, it's terrible when you wake up and you've got bruises all over your body, and you think, oh, you're so clumsy. When you're thinking, what could I run into now? My whole life I've had nothing. And they look like fingerprints.
Uh-huh.
Little pressure points on you.
Oh, that's the same as it is for me when I wake up and I have bruises where there's no way possible that I could have done them to myself. And then on top of it, you think about, you're moved through the house, people bump into things, that's common. But the places these bruises are, unless you're climbing, I don't know if you've ever climbed through little portholes or anything like, the Navy and these Navy ships, and you lift your arms up to pull yourself through the porthole, there's bruises underneath that part of your arm, okay, that you'll get. Well, when you're at home in bed, there's no portholes in a house or anything to go climbing through, but you get these fingerprint bruises underneath there, and there's no way possible that you could do it yourself. There's fingerprint bruises on your back where there's no way you could reach and cause these things. And, it's scary as crap waking up with that or finding needle marks in your body or places where skin's been scooped out. There's all kinds of different things that happen.
Have you ever woke up when your arm was dislocated or pulled, your shoulder?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just like somebody had been dragging me.
Yeah.
I to this day, right now I'm having to see a chiropractor over that very thing, and I was hoping that it was just something I'd done to myself, but evidently it was pretty severe. I had a dislocated vertebrae almost from the x-ray, so... we're down to our last 2 minutes. Is there anything you'd like to say before we head out?
I think the most important thing that I've learned through all these years is to back up a little bit and realize that it's not a good thing, it's not a bad thing. It's just what is happening, and that if you can look at it from a good perspective, good. But if you at least read, research it, realize you're not alone. There are other people that it's happening to. Somehow they bring us back intact. I would love to understand what it's all about. If I do, I do. If I don't, I don't. But at least I know there are others that, you can talk to and work with and kind of feel a comfort zone there knowing that, can share a little bit, which is a good thing.
Right. That's one of the reasons I set up my website is just to give everybody a safe place to go. At alienabductee.org, and what it does, it just allows people a safe haven, so they can discuss things in a nice format without people calling them names or, prejudging them, and it just, gives them an outlet. I think that was the biggest problem when I was growing up is just having the outlet. I don't know how it was for you, but there's nobody to talk to.
There was no outlet.
Yeah. Let's see. And also, if anybody out there would like to join Paranexus, we are looking for other researchers and other people of like mind to join us. We have just got our nonprofit status, and we are now moving forward with that. We have an entire new board of directors. We are constantly looking for new people to bring new ideas, and we would appreciate anybody coming in and bringing us new techniques to the field and everything. And, Dia, I really, really do appreciate you being on the show. What was your website again?
www.d as in Dina, Marie, M-A-R-I-E, Press, P-R-E-S-S.com.
Okay. Great. Doug and Grant will be on next week. I haven't had a chance to talk to them, find out who's coming on. That will be listed on our website at paranexus.org. You can always reach me at alienabductee.org, either admin at alienabductee.org or just Michael lynnjones at alienabductee.org. And feel free to contact me if you'd like any help. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, if anybody would like to talk to Dinah, she's available on her website also. So everybody have a good night. Dinah, have a good night.
And thank you so much.
We'll see you next week, next Thursday. Everybody take care. Yeah?
Yep.
Great.